It is Thursday, August 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, strong aftershocks hit Italy following Wednesday's deadly earthquake. The siege at the American University in Kabul ends, and country music star Jonna Kramer has a challenging personal situation. It's all ahead. Already suffering from the earthquake that shook the area Wednesday, a strong 4.3 magnitude aftershock hit the town of Amatrice in central Italy. The aftershock caused more damage to buildings and sent up plumes of smoke, instilling panic in the town. Meanwhile, civil protection officials have revised the death toll from the initial 6.2 magnitude earthquake to 241. Josephine McKenna is a Rome-based journalist. I asked her to describe the impact of the aftershocks.
We've had several aftershocks since the first earthquake occurred. In fact, in hundreds of aftershocks. There was a serious one this morning of around 4.5. There was another one around 4.3 this afternoon that really shocked emergency workers while they were happening. And you could see the earth shaking and there was noise coming up from the earth beneath the surface. And so there was a great deal of alarm when that occurred this afternoon. And that gives you some idea of the dangers that people there on the scene are working with as the emergency workers, the police and the volunteers are still desperately sifting through the rubble, racing against the clock to try and pull out any survivors that might be beneath the debris.
And what about the people that survived the initial earthquake? Have they been able to be transported out of the region?
There have been ambulances coming in and out, taking people away. Around 217 people have been rescued. A great deal of concern about people that might be buried beneath a hotel that collapsed. This area, as you know, is a tourist destination, and this weekend there was going to be a spaghetti festival. Amatrice in particular is famous for the Amatriciana sauce, and they were doing a spaghetti festival. So there are a lot of tourists in the area. Around 20 to 30 are unaccounted for from this particular hotel that collapsed. But really some terrible stories of people who have been killed, young children in particular. One of the victims was a 9-month-old baby girl whose parents survived. Another was an 18-month-old toddler. And we also had two twins, 7-year-old boys, who were killed in the devastation. So horrible stories, amazing stories of survival, but still some really shocking stories of the victims as we're learning more about who has been killed and where they came from.
Have authorities been able to get enough personnel to the scene, whether people helping with the recovery or search, or also medical personnel to the scene to assist those affected by the earthquake?
Well, they have around 5,000 volunteers and professionals from the Civil Protection Department on the scene. Some of the volunteers are medical personnel. They've been managing to move the injured to local hospitals in nearby towns and trying to keep the roads free for those ambulances. One of the towns had a hospital that was damaged by the earthquake, and indeed, while the quake was occurring, staff were moving all of those patients out into the streets while the first quake was actually taking place. So that gives you some idea of the desperation at the scene. There is still concern about these aftershocks because I don't know if you recall, but in 2012 we had a serious earthquake in the central Italian region of Emilia-Romagna. And several people died in that quake. And then a week later, there was another serious aftershock earthquake that caused another round of damage and injury. So people are very mindful of these aftershocks and very concerned. We've had almost 500 in the last 24 hours since the first earthquake occurred.
That's journalist Josephine McKenna reporting from Rome. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky with a look at what's trending. So, Andrew, what's happening?
Well, The U.S. election has been trending and will continue to be trending for the next few months until November and probably even beyond. But today we're looking at the issue of race and the issue of bigotry, specifically Donald Trump in a speech in Jackson, Mississippi, calling Hillary Clinton a bigot. And this has set off a social media firestorm, people on Hillary's side saying that it's a ridiculous comment. She's fought for minorities throughout her career. Donald Trump's people embracing a theme that he's been embracing, that minorities have nothing to lose and that they should give Donald Trump a look. Right now, his poll numbers are very poor among African-Americans and Hispanics, but they're saying, you know what, it can't get worse than it already is because a lot of these people are dealing with poverty and other issues. So that back and forth going on social media. Another one, hashtag alt-right means. Now, this surrounds the alt-right movement, which is a movement that is fiercely opposed to immigration and multiculturalism, very pro-nationalist. And Hillary Clinton today is set to speak about what this means and how Donald Trump has connected his campaign to this kind of fringe group on the right. Donald Trump's people saying, well, we do support, you know, anti-immigration and those kind of things, but we don't support radicalism. But it's kicked off this hashtag of what alt-right means. And on the left, people are saying it means bigotry and racism. On the right, they're saying it means trying to curtail some of the illegal immigration. So that debate is continuing. But the other hashtag we have here in the U.S. is NPS 100. And that's because on August 25th, 1916, the U.S. National Park System was founded. So it's the 100th anniversary today, so people posting lots of pictures of their favorite national parks, some really stunning images that people are sharing, celebrities putting out their favorite moments in national parks, including Ken Burns, who the documentarian who did a big series on the national parks a few years ago. So happy birthday to the National Park Service. I will be going out and saying thank you to some of the park rangers out here on the National Mall, which is the national park right outside our door here at VOA.
Yeah, we don't always think about it, that as part of the national parks, but they are indeed beautiful. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top stories trending. The U.S.-backed Kurds withdraw in Syria. Russia begins military exercises on land and sea. The United Nations says Somali refugees are leaving Kenya because of threats and pressure. And the U.S. nominates World Bank President Jim Yong Kim for a second term. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A diet containing less fat, sugar, or salt is often recommended to many to ensure good health. But the downside of those diets might mean having to eat foods that really don't taste so good. Now, French scientists say they are working on a device that could help diners on restrictive diets enjoy the full flavor of their favorite foods and still eat healthfully. The device they call GCOAT allows scientists to isolate specific aroma molecules associated with a full-flavored food. When you eat, your taste buds allow you to sense sweet, sour, salty, bitter, and savory tastes. By applying the proper amount of these aroma molecules in food, the brain can be fooled into thinking that there is more fat, sugar, or salt than what may actually be present in that very healthful food you are having for lunch. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Myanmar copes with the aftermath of an earthquake. Afghan police say at least 13 people are dead and more than 45 wounded after a nearly 10-hour-long attack on the American University of Afghanistan in Kabul ended Thursday. Kabul Police Chief Abdul Rahman Rahimi told VOA's Afghan service more than 700 staff and students were rescued after being trapped inside the university complex. I spoke with reporter Suna Rasmussen in Kabul about the attack.
The attack was declared over early today in the morning, so about 12 hours ago it was declared over after a 10-hour-long operation where special forces entered the compound and slowly moved their way to the grounds of the university in search of the assailants. From what officials tell us, there were three assailants. Two of them were shot by the special forces and the third one was a suicide bomber who blew himself up.
Has there been any claim of responsibility for this attack?
No, there hasn't been any claim of responsibility, which is quite unusual for an attack of this kind. Normally, we get one militant group or the other claiming responsibility within a couple of hours of an attack or maximum the day after. But the Taliban haven't claimed responsibility. They say they're investigating, whatever that means. The Islamic State, who perfetrated one attack, their first in Kabul about a month ago, have also been silent. Some speculation might be the Haqqani Network, who's a more radical arm of the Taliban movement. But all that is guesswork at the moment. We don't really know who's behind it, and I think we shouldn't jump to conclusions. But it is unusual that nobody has come forth to claim responsibility yet.
Well, in addition to the attackers, is it known who were the people that were killed?
Seven of them were students, including at least one woman. And then there were three police officers. At least one of them died in battle against the terrorists. He was a well-renowned commander in the special forces. And then two university guards were also killed.
Is it known why this site was selected? Was it because of its relations with the U.S.?
No. I mean, since there's been no claim of responsibility, we don't know why the American university was the target of the attack. But, I mean, people have been speculating. It's a symbol of Afghanistan's cooperation with its international allies, namely the United States. It's a sign of progress in Afghanistan, of hope in the future. It's a sign of the West's ambitions to create progress or help progress in Afghanistan. But then it's also a place where both men and women study together. It's co-education. And that does rub some people the wrong way in Afghanistan. We don't know what of those motivations could have triggered this attack, or if it's something different. But those are some of the things that people are speculating here. That would be, the obvious reasons would be one of those.
That's reporter Suna Rasmussen in Kabul, Afghanistan. Myanmar's president, Tin Jaw, Thursday flew to the ancient capital of Bagan to assess damage caused by the powerful earthquake that shook the north-central part of the country and killed at least three people. The president said that UNESCO, Japan, and China have offered to help restore the historic site, but that the process would be long and difficult. Bagan is home to thousands of ancient Buddhist pagodas, dozens of which sustained damage in Wednesday's 6.8 magnitude quake. Tun Lewin is a meteorologist in Myanmar. He also is the CEO of the Myanmar Climate Change Watch, a nonprofit organization. I asked him about the extent of the earthquake damage in Myanmar.
The last earthquake that occurred yesterday, it has an intensity of 6.8 on Richter scale, and it is very close to one of our historical and agricultural places, call it Bagan. And there were several damages, especially in old pagodas and some buildings. But the international organization and the government official ranked the extent of damage as medium.
Is this area prone to earthquakes?
There is a town in the middle of the country called Chok. Chok is a town in Maguid Division. And the earthquake occurred at a center, which is 15.5 miles or 25 kilometers to the west of Chok.
Have authorities from the government, I'm assuming they have been on the scene to tour the site and or to try to help residents of the area?
Yes, I think they did, yes. The Minister for Social Welfare is already there, and I think even the president is already there, yes, to see the victims, yes.
Is there, anything that areas like this that are prone to earthquakes can try to do to try to protect the area when these occur?
Well, protection probably is not very extensive because the area, one of the good things about that the earthquake area is the population is not very, very intense. The population is sparse, and there were no very high rising building there. Therefore, except the pagodas, you know, pagodas are very ancient pagodas. They have been there for more than 1,000 years, except that most of the living quarters are not heavily, what do you call it, damaged, yes.
Well, and I assume in this kind of thing, it probably takes a few days or for a while to determine the extent of the damage.
Right. That you are also right, yes. But this time, the government officials did their job very much better than the previous government because we already seen the list of damage, pagodas, buildings, and everything. So anyway, the first drop is already seen by many people, yes.
Tun Nguyen, he's a meteorologist in Myanmar, speaking from Rangoon. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Last year, Reba McEntire split with her husband, Narvel Blackstock, and Miranda Lambert broke up with Blake Shelton. Now there's talk of another country music marriage coming to an end. Nikki Strong of VOA 1 is here to fill us in. So what's going on, Nikki?
Oh, my goodness. Heartbreak, disappointment, life. So several outlets, including E! News and People Magazine, are reporting that actress and country singer Jana Kramer and her husband, former professional football player, NFL tight end Michael Cousin, are separating.
Well, aren't they newlyweds?
Yeah, they are. They were just married in May of last year, and they just had their first child, a little girl, yeah, named Jolie, yeah.
Well, any word on why they're separating?
No, not yet, because this is almost like breaking news. But we do know that this news does come as Mike enters a rehab facility for undisclosed reasons, so no one knows why he's there and how that may play a role in what's happening. Neither one of them has released an official statement. The news also comes at a time when Jana is releasing new music as well. She's touring in support of her CD 31, and she has a new single out now called Circles. And interestingly enough, it's about an unbreakable bond. It's about loving nonstop. So hopefully this is a temporary arrangement between the two, and we just wish them the best.
Yeah, particularly with a baby.
Yes, especially when there's a baby involved who's not even one. So hopefully it'll all work out.
You can hear music from Jana Kramer and other country artists on VOA 1's Country Hits with Nikki Strong. You can also connect with Nikki on Facebook at VOA 1 and on Twitter at VOA 1 The Hits. Thanks very much, Nikki.
You're welcome.
Just the thought of you around gets my head spinning in circles. Just the way you say my name gets my heart turning in circles.
And that is the music of Jana Kramer. And that's our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Siraj Uddin Haqqani is a fugitive who was wanted in connection with the January 2008 attack on the Serena Hotel in Kabul, Afghanistan, that killed six people. A Pashtun Afghan believed to be hiding in the federally administered tribal areas of Afghanistan, Haqqani is about 37 years old, stands 169 centimeters tall, weighs approximately 68 kilograms, with a light, wrinkled complexion and black hair. He is also known as Siraj Haqqani, or Khalifa. Haqqani is a senior leader of the terror network founded by his father, Jalaluddin Haqqani, and he maintains close ties to al-Qaeda. He had admitted planning the January 14, 2008 attack on the Serena Hotel in Kabul that killed six people, including an American, Tor David Hesla. He also admitted planning the April 2008 assassination attempt on Afghan President Hamid Karzai and taking part in attacks on U.S. and coalition forces in Afghanistan. The Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to Haqqani's arrest or prosecution. The U.S. guarantees that all reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the U.S. is prepared to protect informants by relocating them. If you have information on this man, contact the Regional Security Office at the nearest U.S. Embassy and the tip line at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email information to rfj@state.gov.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.